So welcome to the Fiddy Host podcast, a show about the challenges of building a new internet. And here we are with one of the OGs, Evan Prodromo, here in Montreal in a cafe. Thank you for coming on the show.
Thank you so much for having me. I'm glad to be here.
Oh, it's a delight. You know, I was so glad when I first found out about ActivityPub. I was like, there's this guy who's really involved in it. Evan, what's this? Okay. And then I Googled you and I was like, no way. He lives down the street.
I've lived here in Montreal since the early 2000s. And I moved here because I really loved the conjunction of technology and creativity we have in Montreal, right? Like, I had a lot of people that I knew from the city who were doing interesting things, and I was like, I want to be part of that. Living here has really been an important part for me of developing the work that I do.
Do you think that the work that you're doing is particularly culturally kind of Montreal?
That's an interesting way to put it. I think one thing that happens for us in Montreal is, you know, we are such a crossroads of European, North American, Commonwealth, right? We have language crossover. We're such a place that brings in different networks, and in a way that is a lot of what ActivityPub does, right? It lets you connect to the different networks. You're not necessarily one thing or another. You center it on yourself.
Yeah, we'd be a cultural bridgey.
Yes, this case, exactly.
Between Europe and North America.
Right down Saint Laurent. Yeah, exactly.
That's really cool. When we talked last time, I remember you mentioning that your partner is like a diplomat. You had this kind of interest in language. You wanted that kind of thing yourself.
Yeah, she's works with UN organizations, helping them develop their websites, approaching different audiences with different messages and languages that make sense for those their needs. You know, I'm not just following on her coattails. I have my own independent self, but we definitely, you know, talk quite a bit about how people have different kinds of messages that they bring to themselves based on where they're coming from.
Do you think that people who know you from podcasts realize that you speak French?
I'm not sure. They probably don't. I do a little bit of French online. Often when people ask me questions, they switch into English. So I start from English from there.
Yeah. In the same boat.
Yeah.
So one of the kind of overarching things whenever I'm looking at the Fediverse is you seem like you're, in the programming sense, very architectural, big picture.
Right.
When you see the implementation, what surprises you about where it ends up going?
It's a dance, it's a conversation, right, between architects and implementers, between protocol designers and the companies that build on them. There's a lot of gratitude. Like, I am so grateful for the open source organizations and the companies that have, you know, put the effort into making ActivityPub part of their products or part of their software. There is often disappointment. Maybe more disappointment in myself than in the implementers, because important architectural concepts did not get implemented, right? And being like, I wish that had made it in. You know, I wish I had been in there, and feeling somewhat responsible that, you know, as an architect, as a protocol designer, I have a responsibility to communicate the importance of those particular structures or patterns, and feeling somewhat that I didn't do it. One thing that has to happen though, as we go kind of back and forth, right? Proposing a protocol, seeing it implemented, and then coming back and building extensions or improvements on that protocol, is we have to kind of work with the Fediverse as it lives right now, right? So we start off with these kind of green fields. Wouldn't it be great if, you know, things work this way, and it gets implemented, and then it's like, okay, let's add something that makes this somewhat better, you know, in different ways, the way it works right now.
When you first were doing the spec for ActivityPub, did you kind of think one day HTML will be ActivityPub 5? Did you kind of go like, this is for sure a living thing?
Yeah, I think ActivityPub is much more like, HTML isn't probably a terrible description, but maybe more like HTTP, the protocol that works between services, like between your browser and the web server. And the reason I say that is that HTTP, like, even though it's going on 40 years old, right, coming up soon, it is on version 2, right? Like, in all that time, we've only gotten to version 2. And the reason is that we really depend on interoperability there, right? So if my web server changes to this, like, new, not compatible standard for HTTP, none of the browsers in the world can actually hit it, right? And so there's a real cost to having any kind of breaking changes. The reason I bring that up with ActivityPub is we have now in the low 50 millions of people who are connected through ActivityPub across the internet. And if we were to introduce breaking changes there, it would mean that those people would lose their connections, right? And for me as a technologist, right, those connections are not mine to break. I don't get to decide, you know, this father and this son can no longer talk because I had a great idea about how the protocol should change, right? Those are people's social connections. They're most important parts of their lives. And so we have to really preserve compatibility in order to make it work, right?
So how did you handle that? Did you plan for upgradability, like being like, we need to be very, very flexible?
First, we have a very simple core protocol that ActivityPub depends on. It is relatively few pages of specification covering how to follow someone, how to send something to other people, a few other kinds of data like notes and images and videos, right? So there's very simple core spec. Second thing we did is we built a larger vocabulary that at the time, 2015, 2016, covered a lot of the different social networking patterns that existed at that time. Things like having groups, making event announcements, doing geosocial like check-ins. And we really tried to cover kind of the universe of social networking so that people could have a built-in vocabulary when they wanted to start building these applications and send it through the same network that this very simple system was working on. And then the third thing that we did was we acknowledged that social software changes, the internet changes, people change. And we made an extensible vocabulary. So it's possible for new applications, developers to add extensions on top of the network to send whole different kinds of content through the network. So like, for example, there's a great community called Manyfold on the Fediverse that does 3D model sharing, right? And so they create, collaborate on and share 3D models through this network, and they built their whole own vocabulary for these 3D objects within ActivityPub. And it just goes right through the same network. So we didn't have to make any fundamental changes at all.
So how does it work when you're watching the implementations and you go, that was a good idea, like, but we should roll that in? Can you walk me through that process of identifying the elements that you want to include in the next version or the next iteration?
Well, I just to like make it clear, like, I don't think we would do it in a predatory sense, like, ooh, we got to snatch that from them.
Inspiration.
For
it. Like formalizing it, right?
So we have a few steps that go into it. So we do have something of a formal process for taking extension vocabularies and making them part of the core vocabulary. What we look for is making sure there's no conflicts with existing vocabulary, right? So if you define a new way of describing images, we're like, we'd rather have that integrated than substitute it in. So we're looking for, are there conflicts with the existing vocabulary? We want to see two publishers, right? Two sources of the content, and then two consumers, two sets of, and these have to be independent implementations. So what we're looking for is, has this actually been hammered out? Is this just one application talking to itself, or have we actually got like multiple applications talking to each other on both sides of the network? And then once that's happened, as long as the creators of the extension have given intellectual property rights to it that are appropriate for an open standard, so they've made a patent license, you know, you don't have to pay them to use this technology, et cetera, then we're ready to go when we incorporate it into the system.
So like a good example would be the Move vocab in Mastodon that GoTo Social's also supporting.
Yes,
so you get this, like, you're like, there's some consensus here.
Yep.
And you're not coming in and being like, here's the rules. You're like coming in and being like, it seems like the community has already found something here.
Absolutely, yeah. Okay. In that case, that data portability case, which is so important, right? So you've got your account on one server and you want to move to a different server. We have actually the Mastodon implementation, which is the one that originally existed, lets you move your social graph, people you follow, people who follow you, to another server. But it doesn't let you move your content. So a data portability project has created a protocol called Lola that works on top of ActivityPub that lets you pull all your content along with you too.
Oh, who's implementing that?
Her name is Lisa Dussault. She created CardDev, CalDev. So the way that we all share calendars across the internet, she did that.
Wow.
Very impressive. And she's working on this problem right now. So it's a W3C task force. She's leading the task force and we're getting it done.
Oh, that's awesome. Yeah. That's like one of the most important things.
It really is. Yeah. Yeah. Well, let me say this. It is somewhat important. It's important right now, definitely. Yeah. The way we've built our social networking up until now, it has been that we kind of get invited to work on these commercial social networks like X or Facebook or Threads. And then we kind of generate a lot of content within that network and we're not able to really leave it, right? You can maybe download a backup, but there's nowhere to restore it to. The Fediverse makes it possible to move between those networks, but we have really set up a topology on the Fediverse of volunteer-run servers with strangers setting up, you know, accounts on them. And that topology has a lot of churn, a lot of turnover. Those volunteers like set up servers and then they're like, this is hard. I don't have time for this. People aren't nice to me. So they tend to drop off fast and then everybody there has to move. I think that as the Fediverse grows, we're going to see more companies or families or clubs or associations, professional associations setting up services. So your affiliation with that service is much more long lasting, right? You're not going there and then moving 6 months and then moving 6 months again, right? It's your employer and you're just like there as long as you're employed, right? So,
which kind of brings us to CoSocial.
Yes.
As an organization, which I think
Absolutely.
Is a great like way to handle some of the stuff, the professional, but a nice version of it, version of the internet that we hope exists.
Yeah.
Well, did you start CoSocial with a group of people?
I'm one of the people who started it. So CoSocial is a cooperative social media platform. So cooperative meaning that all of the members who use the platform are co-owners of the platform. They have shares, they can vote, we make decisions together about, you know, electing a board, et cetera. This is a pretty common structure for infrastructure, right? So we have here in Quebec, we have Cooptel, which is a cooperative for phones and internet. People are familiar with like co-op grocery stores, especially in rural areas. Same kind of idea that we are paying to make sure that this infrastructure exists and supports us. It also means that we pay for the service. So it's not a free service. We're paying to support the service, but that means that CoSocial, the organization, can pay software developers, pay moderators, pay sysadmins to keep all our servers running. So it's much less fragile than the volunteer run services.
Super, super stable model, really. Yeah. Like more stable than even a private entity because you're dealing with this, like the ballast of a large number of people making a decision.
Absolutely, right? So like we're all used to VC funded social networks where it's like, it's gonna be free. It's gonna have all kinds of great services, etc. but if it doesn't make it to like a billion users in 3 years, it's going to disappear, right? So it's this real unstable structure that we think of as like the corporate system. And with a co-social, it's really the users who are running it. We make the decisions about how it's run. We make decisions about moderation and what's acceptable and unacceptable technology. And the upshot is that it doesn't have to be a billion person business, right? Like it's a very workable business, even with thousands, tens of thousands, hundreds of thousands of people.
In the book's balance says people come on. If you have a surplus, you'd be like, we could add another service now.
Exactly.
That sort of thing, right?
Yeah, that's exactly it.
It's a really cool model. Can non-Canadians join CoSocial?
It's a Canadian cooperative. It's literally a corporate structure that's built in here in Canada. We wanted to make sure, one, that any kind of business relationship we had with someone was governed by the laws of Canada, right? And then second, that any moderation or content relationship we had with someone were also governed by the laws of Canada, right? So if we had, not like Chileans are particularly litigious, but like if we had a Chilean user and they were like, well, the rule here in Chile is that, you know, you have to do this. You have to give me this much time before canceling my service, give good service to Canadians and let other people form their own cooperatives in the places they are that are focused on their needs there.
So they could join if they wish to, but they would need to understand they're operating under the jurisdictional law of Canada.
They cannot join.
They cannot join. Okay, right. That's sweet. Sorry, Chileans.
Yeah, sorry, Chileans.
I'm sure you guys are happy to help them if they wanted some.
We would very much like to support. So there are three or four other big cooperative services, data.dk, which is one that's based in Denmark, and then Social Co-op, which is headquartered in the UK, but they have actually gone more international. And we work with these folks all the time, and we'd really like to stimulate more local cooperative instances of Mastodon or other Fediverse servers to make sure that we have kind of a good network there. The nice thing about federated social networks is that it never feels like we're cut off. You know, we're still connected across the Fediverse. We just have our own home base that we have control over.
Yeah, and ideally countries would have dozens of their own cooperatives for different flavors of people and people with like different hobbies and stuff. Yeah. It might even be a cooperative of more controversial types who aren't federated with as many people, you know. So yeah, it's a cool model. I love it. For $50 a year, no ads.
No ads. You know?
And you are part of making decisions. You got your little seat on the board in a way.
Yeah.
So
wow, yeah. You make a pretty good case.
Oh yeah, well, I'm a member.
I think one of the things that comes up, especially for people outside the United States, is how much of our social connections are dependent on commercial organizations based in the U.S., headquartered in the U.S., who are making decisions, you know, for their shareholders and not making decisions for Canadians and Canadians' best interests, right? And so I think that like that aspect of federation that kind of distributes the locus of control to Hong Kong and to Kenya and to Australia, right? And we're no longer like centered on these US corporations, but we can be running our own systems.
Yeah, I think people have made the point in the past and, you know, over time realized the internet is quite a strange place.
Yeah.
And a lot of that strangeness actually was that it was inspired by a very particular group of people in a very particular country.
Yeah.
And so the internet reflects those values, but maybe as the internet matures and it's less the Wild West,
Well,
the internet's going to be probably quite different. Yeah. And that, say, European influence of like a kind of more, you can't just say whatever you want. We're going to like have this kind of pro-social like behavior and some more stuff like that kind of coming in.
One of the things that has been a big divider on our planet is that there are, 1.2 billion people who live on their own internet, right? China erected this Great Wall of China, Great Firewall that they call it, where a lot of content can't cross their internet boundaries. And what they have done in China is develop domestic social networks, domestic microblogging systems like X, messaging systems, and you know, say what you will, like, it's not great. It's not a great reason to have it, right? They're trying to filter out information about democracy and human rights, which isn't so fantastic. But what it does mean is that people across that divide can't communicate, right? And you know, if you're overseas Chinese, you're not able to, like, you know, see pictures that mom posted, right? People find ways around it. It's not easy, but people find ways around it. I think one of my hopes is that we can see Federation crossing that great firewall, right? And say, like, you have your own social networks. We've got social networks here on the outside. Let's make sure there's a connection between them so that people can talk.
Yeah, I mean, one example, not that there's a firewall, but Miski, right, is extremely Japanese.
Absolutely.
And it's like this
Japanese
huge force.
And Korean, I think, too. Yeah.
So it is like a lot of things, like Twitter is extremely English speaking, extreme like Western, like base, right?
Yeah.
And it's like things kind of pick up in different countries. I like the idea of it, a protocol picking up worldwide is just like what it is, right?
There is a virtuous cycle that builds up as we grow, right? Mm-hmm. The more people there are on the Fediverse, the more that content creators, publications, politicians, etc., want to be on that network in order to reach that audience. And then the more content and important people and publications that are on the network, the more people want to join, right? So you get like content brings community comes back to content, right? And they just kind of go back and forth that way. So I think it's been a tough growth period right now, but we're seeing like accelerating growth. So
to me, it's a bit like self-evident. Since joining the Fediverse, it makes me happy. It's just, like, it's more enjoyable. It's enjoyable. And so, like, sure, when I was on Twitter, I would get, you know, 100x times as much like engagement or whatever.
Sure.
But I wasn't happy because a lot of the engagement was horrible.
Yeah.
And abusive. Wasted tons of my time. You know, yeah. I'd be like, I'm not working right now because I'm depressed because someone said this, or I'm angry. Whereas the Fediverse is so chill.
Yeah.
And just makes you more effective as a person.
Yes.
Weirdly enough, you know, it gives you a boost, you know.
One of the things that happens with us in these commercial social networks is that the algorithms are designed to keep us anxious, to keep us excited, right? So there's an actual psychological effect, biochemical effect, where we have this adrenaline dopamine cycle where we get very excited about something. They put some rage bait into our feed and we're like, I'm furious about this. And then we get this dopamine hit of, you know, responding to a Trump tweet with like, you suck, and you get like 1,000 likes, and it's yet like, yes, I'm the best. This is wonderful. And so that cycle of like adrenaline hit, you know, very anxious, and then payoff of dopamine is highly addictive. When people talk about social media addiction, that's what they're talking about. We're getting pushed into this world. And product designers like design products specifically to get that structure, right? Like they work to do that. One of the things about at least the current Fediverse software, although it's not built into the system, is that we've really kind of put aside all of those like growth hacking, engagement hacking tricks. And it's really much more about like connecting to people you care about and that you're interested in, or topics that you're interested in. And so it's a much calmer experience, right? And I think that that's a really important aspect for people. I think that, you know, one of the experiences I have with using the Fediverse right now is like, I go on it, I look, I see what's new, I see if I have any messages, I see if anything's happening, and then I'm like, and then I put down my phone and I go do something else, right? Like there is an end to it, instead of being in that constant loop, that death scrolling experience. Yeah.
Yeah, it does. I mean, it seems to me to exhibit the classic addictive. I think of it a bit like smoking. Yeah. Feels good, you know? Yeah. And there's also, I notice people say, I'm not going to use Twitter. And then you'll kind of catch them on it and they'll be embarrassed and ashamed of themselves. Sure. For being, you see, and when I bring this up with people, they sometimes will scoff. You know, yeah. I know some people who are teetotalers, you yeah. know, and but they still have a raging addiction to Twitter. They just cannot kick it.
Yeah.
And I just see this. I'm like, I know addicts. This yeah. is really classic.
Yeah.
You know.
Well, there's a psychological term called cognitive dissonance, right? So this is an experience that we have where we have a physical addiction to something. So smoking being the classic, but social networking being another one where we're literally like pushing that biochemical pathways that are causing that addictive behavior. And we don't want to admit it to ourselves, right? We don't want to admit that we're addicted to smoking, that we're addicted to social media. So we create a second narrative, right? Which is one that explains our behavior and maybe shows us in a more positive light. Like, oh, I only go on Twitter to like get the pulse of, you know, what's happening, right? Or everyone has to be there, or I have to be there for my business or whatever. And it is a like self-fulfilling thing. We tell ourselves these narratives and then we actually convince ourselves to do it more. And I think one of the things that we have to do kind of as a society is say, is that what we want? Is that really what's important to us? Or are things like personal self-fulfillment, personal happiness, connections with people that actually matter to us, engagement in civic society in a way that actually does something, right? And I think that that's a tough choice to make, but once you do it, it's a much more empowering choice too.
I love your examples because we've all heard them, right?
Yeah.
No, I need to have my finger on the pulse of it. It's just like, you need to know 10 minutes before everyone else, before yeah. it goes up on the news site. You
exactly.
know, like
it's
weird that somehow I've managed to do this journalism gig for years without having Twitter somehow. You know, and I'll say to people like, so do you think my videos are uninformed? Do you think that my, they're like, no, no. I'm like, wow, it's amazing how somehow this is yeah. happening without right. spending. In the end, I see it as like, I'm not spending 3 hours a day being right. Reading the same tweet about Donald Trump or whatever. Like, it's a productivity thing. It is yeah. unproductive to use yeah. traditional social media.
And it is also like, you know, this was a much bigger deal when Donald Trump used Twitter, right? But like, you know, he would come on and make a post and make a spelling mistake, right? Spell his wife's name wrong. And it would be like all anyone there was talking about for like 1 day, 2 days. And it was like, oh, I want to be part of that. I want to see the funny dunks on. And you know, you are getting a charge out of it. It's great to see that stuff. But at the end, it's like, did that matter? Like you were participating in something that was very closed and focused on its own world. That's not the real world, right? Mm. Like that is a very like separate world. And I think it's important to think about like what your real world is. So,
yeah.
Yeah.
You know, you ask people, you realize you're kind of like making them more relevant. You're all participating in boosting this person up to being a person you need to care about. You're playing a role and actually probably not what you want,
yeah.
you know, as an outcome and yeah. and these sorts of things too, right?
Yeah.
There's a few things about the Fediverse. I'm like, is someone working on this?
Yeah.
One of them is, we come to the moving thing. The yeah. Multiple identities thing is something yes. I've wondered about. You know,
yeah.
as a person, I've got my PeerTube, I've got my master. I'm like, is there some sort of work on like a unified parent account or something like that?
Yeah, that's a super good question. It is a, there are some ways that we can do it, right? One way is that that we can automate having like one main account, like Mastodon, for example, that follows all your other accounts and just reposts everything they mm-hmm. do, right? So at least people who follow that one account will see what you have and they can reply and participate that way. So that's one way. I think the other way that is more, so when we talk about disappointments, this is one of the disappointments I really have. Is that like we never intended ActivityPub to have all these like different services for different kinds of content, right? Like PeerTube and PixelFed, et cetera. We expected those to be client applications that would post into your main service, right?
Mm.
So you would have one place that you post. And those different systems would work more like a client application, right? Like using your main identity. So what I'd like to see is more of that structure happening from these great systems. I mean, I love PeerTube. I think it's great. I love PixelFed. I think it's great. I think they need to have better integration where you can say, bring your own account from another Fediverse server and say, don't post to my PixelFed account, just post right through to my Mastodon or GoToSocial or Pleroma account. There's some structural work in there, but actually for the application developers, it's much nicer, much easier, because they don't have to have the same level of infrastructure for delivering content.
Yeah, it's a little bit of a convergence with some of the blue sky stuff, I guess, like the PDS concept, you know, and the saving the infrastructure. So you're just doing client stuff.
Exactly, exactly.
Is ActivityPods this?
So what I'm describing is we have an API built into ActivityPub that uses the same vocabulary, et cetera. ActivityPods is similar, but not compatible. So it's built on another API called Solid. There's nothing wrong with it. I think it's fine. I just think it's better. It is easier for software developers to kind of use the same vocabulary, the same kind of interface. One thing built into the system. So if I was going to talk to a developer and say, if they were like, should I implement the ActivityPub API or Solid, which is the ActivityPods API, I'd be like, try ActivityPub, see if it works for you. If you're really crazy about Solid, implement that instead. Both work.
So how would this work? You would say Mastodon would be like, we are going to build out endpoints that would let PeerTube videos be uploaded to Mastodon.
Yep, exactly that.
And then PeerTube would be like, oh, now we don't have to do that server. We will shift over to
Parkway. So basically what it would do is say, instead of sending the announcement, hey, there's a new video out directly from the PeerTube server, which takes like a lot of resources. Because if you have thousands of followers, it's got to go out to thousands of servers. Instead, they pass the announcement through Mastodon, and Mastodon does the delivery instead, right? So Mastodon can concentrate on being a great delivery service and still have all these different applications that work on top of it.
Yeah, it seems like probably the most obvious candidate would be PixelFed, probably.
Absolutely, yeah, I think so.
PeerTube is doing a lot in its back end, right?
Yeah,
like it'd be a lot for Mastodon to put that over there.
And there's definitely like lots of questions, like where is the content hosted, right? But things like, you know, likes and shares, all that kind of things, as well as having that single identity. That's really how the system was designed. Yeah.
Is there a potential for an ActivityPub solution? So, you know, you have an actor that's kind of a super actor, and they don't do anything, but they can be assigned accounts or something like that.
Yeah. So, like I mentioned, that structure where you have one actor that reposts everything the other actors do, right? And you just follow that one.
Like the PeerTube user.
Yes, exactly.
Would be in the channel setup that they have. Yeah, okay. I know you're working on messaging, the DM problem, right? That's this is the last kind of like subject thing.
Great question.
So I'm really interested to know how that's going and kind of implementation-wise, what you would anticipate seeing once it's done.
So the way that ActivityPub DMs work is that you identify a particular person that you're going to send a message to. You address your message just to that person, and it gets delivered to them on their server, which is exactly how email works, right? You write an email, you send it to the person, and it goes onto their email server. The problem with this system is that when I am using my university email address to send something to someone's work address at their employer, we kind of have this sense that there's affinity between me and my university. I have an agreement with them about, you know, how email is handled, whether they're allowed to look at my email, et cetera. It's part of my experience as a student. And likewise, the person who's I'm sending to, they have a relationship with their employer. They have either an employment agreement. Usually the agreement is we get to look at all your email all the time, but at least you know that, right? And so there's this kind of expectation that's built into using these organizations that we've got relationships with. What has happened on the Fediverse over the last, you know, 5 years or so as it's developed is, again, we have these volunteer-run services where strangers are have accounts on these services, right? They'll just set it up, you know, fun place for strangers to hang out. And what that means is that the admins of those servers have access to all the content, right? Like, they can go into their internal database and be like, aha, here's where Evan sent a message page. Now, most of them don't do it. It's very unusual, but the fact that it's possible means that for people who are on this network, they feel less comfortable sending DMs, right? And so less comfortable kind of being their full selves in this DM environment. And in fact, in Mastodon, there's a big, on the direct messaging page, there's a big banner that says, DMs are not end-to-end encrypted. This is very, like, dangerous. Don't send anything, you know, run and hide. It's a very, like, kind of threatening banner. So last summer, one of my co-founders in the Social Web Foundation, Tom Coates, and I took on doing end-to-end encryption within ActivityPub. End-to-end encryption means that from your computer or phone to the phone of the person you are sending it to, those are the only two places that the message is readable. Anywhere in between, along the network, in the intermediate services, it is encrypted, totally secure, cannot be cracked in 10,000 years, right? And so that is the goal of this system, is to make DMs end-to-end encrypted so you can go from one end to the other. We examined a lot of different options for the architecture. We did a big review of potential architectures for this system, considered some different APIs, ways that things can work there, as well as some different encryption mechanisms. And what we settled on was a system called MLS, which is messaging layer security. It is an internet standard. We like those, using ActivityPub's built-in API, which I was talking about earlier. We have since then developed a draft standard for this work and started doing some implementation. Tom is a product designer, so he has been doing mostly mockups and, you know, how should implementers show that things are encrypted? How do they interact? And then I've been working on the backend protocol stuff. If we are lucky, we should have a first official draft that the W3C has signed off on by this summer. And then hopefully we start seeing some implementations built in. So ideally, Mastodon and other users and other organizations would start using it.
That's awesome. So yeah. With regards to, like, kind of the practicality of its implementation, will the messages be encrypted and stored on a server, or is it going to go phone to phone, nothing, like, just to kind of...
They're encrypted and stored, right? And you want that so that, you know, if you are on your desktop and you're messaging with someone and then you walk away and you look at your phone, you're still able to download them and review them, et cetera. But they stay encrypted on the server.
Thank you so much for making
sure.
This.
Sure. Thank you so much. I was talking to Victor before. I'd be like, oh, I hope it's implemented in a way where we don't have that. Now I back up my phone to iCloud and I've ruined the whole point of the whole thing.
Right.
You know, yeah. So that's great. That provides a really compelling option for people wanting that final messaging service.
Right. So there's only one thing that is tricky, right? Mm-hmm. So the way that it works is, like, every time you set up your desktop or your phone or whatever, each of those has its own kind of encryption key, which means, like, folks can send a message to it. And so when I send a message to you, I actually send it to all your devices, and they get all of their keys get stored on the service. If you then set up a next service, get a new phone or whatever, the existing messages won't use its key. Like, ongoing messages will, but existing messages won't. So you won't have access to your past conversations, right?
Oh,
does that
right.
make sense?
Okay.
When you have a new device, you don't get access to the past conversations. there are ways to do that catch up. We're not going to mess with them right now. We want to get the basics going first, but yeah, that's where we are right now.
It could work like, I think WhatsApp at least used to be able to backfill from the previous device. So I would keep my iPad set up or whatever. Like I think I would keep my desktop and then I'd get the new phone.
Exactly.
Great. As long as it's possible, because it's something that's very frustrating with Signal as a like Signal user is that thing where I'm like, I'm not, you know, planning terrorist attacks, you know, I just don't want Mark Zuckerberg, you know, reading what I'm up to.
Absolutely.
Right.
So I want usability. I want the toggle a little bit more on the usable side.
Yeah.
So that's good to hear. Yeah. Is it possible that having expended a lot of effort getting friends and family to move across the Signal, is it possible for them to implement this or will it require a final move?
It's going to require a final move. Unfortunately,
damn it.
We wanted to have...
Sorry, Mom. We're off to another app.
So one of the tough things that we've wanted to do, and I'll get some inside baseball here, is that we really wanted to be Signal compatible, right? That was the goal, because WhatsApp, Facebook Messenger, Google RCS, let's see, I think there's at least one other one, are all using the same encryption protocol that Signal does, right? So that we could conceivably in the future, you know, send end-to-end encrypted messages through bridges and where it never got unencrypted anywhere along the system. Unfortunately, the way that Signal works and supports itself is by licensing that technology to those big tech companies. And so there wasn't a way for us to make this work and let Signal keep supporting itself. So, but we had great conversations with Signal, like they're super supportive. We just couldn't make it like mesh up, so.
It's basically proprietary in a way, and so you couldn't make it an open standard?
That's pretty much it, yeah.
Okay, that's unfortunate.
Yeah, so, you know, this is the world sometimes. You know, we love Signal. Signal's a great system. Definitely use it. Use it now. Okay. Use it for the next few years at least while we're getting this thing set up.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But that's cool. I like that you've kind of given, you're giving another permanent home in a way, like permanent messaging home, permanent social media home.
Absolutely.
So that's great.
So one of the things that has been really interesting in the regulatory world is that in the EU established this, Digital Markets Act, right? Where they said that tech companies working in particular areas had to implement connectivity federation basically in their applications. Now, they did not do this for social networks, but they did do it for messaging systems. So companies like WhatsApp are actually under requirements in the EU to support interoperability. And WhatsApp has said that they will interoperate with the messaging standard MLS that we are using, right? They say you have to have as good encryption as we do or else we won't support it. But here are some examples of good encryption. Mm. So
might be a way
we have some hopes.
Yeah, you could add a connection with like an ActivityPub handle.
Yes.
And you can, and mom can keep using WhatsApp. And
exactly. That's the dream. Yeah.
That'd be great. I can be slightly less irritating as a friend for all my non-techie people.
Yeah, exactly.
It's great. So thanks so much. Is there anything else that you know, in these themes that you're like, oh, you should ask about that? Or,
you know, one thing that I think is an interesting concept that people don't, you know that much about is how you get started, right? Like, how do I get to be part of this? Like, if we tell people, hey, stop spending all your time on Twitter, you know, chasing the latest meme and start really thinking about connecting to people that matter to you and topics that are important. And it's like, how do I get started? And I think one of the things that we do in the Fediverse world is like, go download this server application and install it on a cloud server and set up your server, right? We make it very high barrier to entry, and it doesn't need to be. Anyone who has a WordPress blog on wordpress.com can be on the Fediverse like in a few clicks. You just need to turn on one setting and you're on. Anyone who's got an account on Threads, which is Meta's microblogging system uses your Instagram account, so it only takes a few seconds to sign up and a few seconds to enable Fediverse integration, and then you're working, and they are improving every day their two-way interactions. So the effort that's required to go from zero to 60, zero to 100 in the Fediverse is not actually all that much, right? People can really kind of get moving pretty quickly. And hopefully we're going to be seeing more and more social networks connecting to the Fediverse every day.
Yeah, and I think it's important to say to people that if you're using, if you sign up for mastodon.social, you know, the things that are coming in will let you move. If you decide, I love this, I really want to get into it, and start your own server, you're going to be able to. That's the point.
Absolutely, yeah. And then the last thing I would say there is, if you don't have a service, you don't want to be on a WordPress or on a Threads, which is fine, I really recommend to people, take a pause, think about your employer or your university or your a club or a professional organization that you're already part of, and see if you can bring that whole organization to the Fediverse rather than running off and joining some random server that's going to get shut down, take some time to take the groups that you're already part of and bring them into the Fediverse.
Yeah, it is a little strange. I think we'll look back at this period and find it kind of funny that our institutions and universities effectively had a GeoCities website instead of owning their own presence, organization. It's weird, right?
So strange, yeah.
You know, early adopter problems, right?
Absolutely, yeah. But it's just, it goes from being fringe to being, early adopter to being mainstream. And it's McGill, why don't you have a Mastodon server up and going, right? Why are you behind all these other services? So,
well, we just translated our whole website into French.
There we go.
To set up a Quebec market. And
fantastic.
Come on, guys. All right. Thanks so much for everything you've done, and I appreciate you meeting with us.
Oh, great. Well, thank you for having me. This has been really fun.
All right. See you next time.